And now the Endangered Book Review. Book reviewers can be a stringent, grumpy, and glorious bunch. H.L. Mencken and Dorothy Parker come to mind. But amid the hosannas and the vitriol, readers of Sunday book review sections find unexpected voices and new ideas. Over the past few years, though, newspapers have begun to winnow their book coverage. They've moved reviews to the dead zone of the Saturday paper or chosen to jettison the book review section altogether. Some critics, writers, and readers are up in arms. So are book reviews important to you? Why? Where do you read them? Join the conversation. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. John Freeman is president of the National Book Critics Circle, as well as a freelancer and sometimes a critic himself. He's in our New York bureau today, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And how drastic are the cuts to book review sections?
It's pretty dour. The San Francisco Chronicle several months ago cut its section in half. It's one of the most popular sections in the country. The LA Times moved its section, which for 30 years was a standalone, into a combined section with the opinion pages. The Chicago Tribune has moved to Saturday. The Voice Literary Supplement no longer exists. The Boston Phoenix used to have a literary supplement once a month. Now it's once a quarter. I could just run down the line, and it's almost every single paper in the country shy of the Washington Post, Book World, and New York Times.
Mm-hmm. And newspapers point out that these book review sections in particular, they're not moneymakers, and newspapers are having difficulties.
Well, I'd have to argue with that. They're not moneymakers for sure, but I would think that book review sections and newspapers have a combined self-interest, which is that people need to read in order to enjoy the product. And so, if newspapers' circulations are going down, what they need to do is encourage people to read. And the one section which really does that, which has a hardcore group of readers, is the book section.
Well, all sections of the newspaper have hardcore readers. Now, come on. But I understand your point. In a way, though, isn't the publishing industry to blame? If they spent more money advertising books in book review sections, they'd have more book review sections.
I would agree to a certain extent. I mean, book reviews have not received the advertising support that, let's say, the movie section receives from the film industry. On the flip side, book publishers are being asked to pay for almost every step of the production now. They're being asked to pay co-op advertising, which is basically renting space in bookstores to have their books placed in certain places. They're paying higher advances. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be a terrific argument if we come to them and say, oh, by the way, now you're going to have to pay for the book reviews too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to come up with alternate solutions which go beyond just asking them to advertise, because I think one thing publishers will say to us is, hey, advertisements don't sell books, and to a certain degree, they're right.
Is this a new media, old media debate? Is this because more people are going online?
To a certain degree, but I think book sections are one place which could be a pioneer in that realm, because there are a lot of literary bloggers out there who are sort of the frontiersmen of the new media and are picking up some audience, but I'd have to say, by the comparison between what a lit blogger receives in terms of daily hits mm-hmm. or readers and what a book section receives are on a scale of 100 or 1,000 to 1. I mean, for example, the San Francisco Chronicle did a readership survey, and I think they were receiving over 50% of their readers were reading the book section, which could be, you know, as many as 500,000 readers. And a lit blog would get, you know, 2 to 3,000 if it's a really good lit blog. Mm-hmm. So I think these two groups need to work together in order to make sure that the debate is sort of free and fair and open and is encouraging people to come into it rather than sort of turning people away.
Hmm. Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's talk with Cody. Cody's with us from Wausau, Wisconsin.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that I think that reviews in the newspapers are just slightly irrelevant now. Days in our age of the internet. I myself mostly find reviews for books I want to read on Amazon. I just browse the various user reviews, and I find that much more easier and reliable than relying on newspapers.
And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of reviews on Amazon.com. He's absolutely right, John Freeman.
Well, I agree. I think the Amazon reviews are extremely helpful, and they have a point of view, but I think one thing to make clear is that a book review is a form, and it's structured in a way that that an Amazon review isn't always structured, and a book review is vetted. So you won't find, sometimes a friend of the author reviewing a book, whereas Amazon has a lot of ways to get around certain things like that.
Cody, thanks very much.
thought.
Here's an email we got from Andre. I wonder if people even realize the majority of book reviews are stories in themselves. I think most people would enjoy book reviews, but probably have a bad idea of what they really are.
John Updike said that one of the best reviews possible would just be quoting the book in its entirety. And I think that's just a good philosophy with which to approach reviewing a book, which is that it's not about the critic. It's about the book and finding the most clear lens through which to shine the book. And so, you know, I think the best book reviews are stories. They tell a story. They have a point of view, and they start in one place and they end in another. And hopefully along the way you learn something and you sort of evolve as a reader, or you learn something. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with him. But to go back to the point the woman was making earlier, I agree. It's really easy to find reviews online. But the flip side is not everyone's online. Not everyone has a computer, or not everyone has access to a computer. And I think one of the great things about newspaper book reviews is that they don't just speak to the converted. Hmm. You can be flipping through a newspaper looking for the obituaries and stumble on a book review and read two lines and think, oh, I'm going to keep reading this, and then learn about something you never would have learned about. Whereas that listener sounded like she was interested in books, and so that's great. If you're interested in books, there are lots of places you can go directly to on the internet. But if you're just a regular reader, it's nice that you can be caught off guard by a book review in a newspaper.
Let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer's with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan. Jennifer, are you there? No, I guess not. Let's try instead Rick. Rick's with us from Gaze Mills in Wisconsin. Excuse me.
Wisconsin, right. The New York Times Book Review is what I read when I can find it in the paper, otherwise online. And it's just astounding. I agree with what your guest said about book reviews being stories in and of themselves. Either they seem to be a synopsis of the book or perhaps a critique of the style and the content. If it's a synopsis of the book, I learn a lot more about issues, events, and construct of things going on in the world from the book reviews than I often do from the other parts of the paper. And lastly, it's been my entire source of vocabulary expansion since high school.
Hmm.
And I don't think a lot of the other reviews except the New York Times are capable of that.
Well, I have to say, my high school English teachers did the exact same thing. They said to study for the SAT, read the back page essay of the New York Times Book Review. So
just astounding. I have to go through with a marker and go to a dictionary. It's fascinating.
Rick, thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
You mentioned earlier that it's pretty much down to the New York Times Book Review and the Washington Post Book Review sections in terms of regular Sunday sections. Doesn't that give them extraordinary power at this point?
It does. It does. But I think the health of our cultural dialogue means that we should have a multiplicity of voices. There are several other sections which are standalone right now. The San Diego Union-Tribune is also standalone. And the San Francisco Chronicle, even though it's been cut back, is standalone. And there's one other section which I can't think of off the top of my head. But I don't think it would be a good thing for our cultural dialogue if all of us are reading the same articles, if all of us are reading the same voices. I think we need to have as many people out there in the dialogue as possible. And that means there needs to be regional voices. There needs to be people who speak out of Kentucky or Atlanta. People who write from Memphis, Tennessee. You know, you can't just be listening to people writing from New York City and Washington telling you what to think about certain books. I mean, there needs to be more sort of back and forth.
As somebody who's spent most of my life living in those two cities, I couldn't agree with you more. Let's see if we can get Anita on the line. Anita with us from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for taking my call. I can't imagine life without the New York Times Sunday Book Review or the Washington Post. I lived in D.C. for 20 years, and if it weren't for NPR and the New York Times, I don't know what I'd do in Scottsdale. It's a little bit of an intellectual wasteland when it comes to daily conversations. And I look forward to the book review every week, and if my husband toddles off to the pool with it on Sunday morning, I'm mad. I want to sit and read it. And I also use it. I keep them for weeks and months, and if I don't have time to pick up a book, I don't have a two-hour block of time, I'll reread some book reviews. I mean, they're just intellectually stimulating and fun and annoying. They're fabulous.
So they replace books for you?
At time. I mean, I'm an avid reader. I've got 20 books on my shelf right now that I haven't read yet, and I'll probably buy two more tomorrow that I read about. But when you don't have that time for a full book, you know, sometimes I find the review, just the mental stimulation I got out of it made me think enough about that subject that, okay, I don't have time to read that whole book, but at least I've thought about what they've talked about, and I've broadened my horizons a little bit.
All right, Julia, Anita, excuse me. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So long. And let's see if we can get Nathan back on the line. Nathan with us from San Jose.
Hi there. Yeah, I work in a coffee shop, so I have the New York Times and the San Jose Mercury News with me pretty regularly. And I often find myself without time to read them. But one thing I check out every week, other than a couple sections during the week, is the New York Times book review. And I think it's really important to maintain a book review because it connects what's going on in the literary world to what's going on in the news. I think that's an important thing to acknowledge, that what's kind of being lost in my experience of the world is people reading, and putting what's going on in books back in the newspaper, keeping that in the newspaper, seems like a nice cultural manifestation of what we need.
All right, Nathan, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. John Freeman, how are you going to get newspaper publishers around the country to listen to you?
Well, right now we have a petition going in Atlanta that has about close to 5,000 signatures, which is protesting the AJC's recent decision to let go of their book editor and try to run the section with increased wire copy run from an arts editor. And the community has really gotten behind that. And we actually have a protest Thursday at 10 a.m. in Atlanta in front of the offices of the Atlanta Journal at 72 Marietta Street. So if there are any listeners out there who feel like they want to speak up, that's a good place to start. So right now we're trying to fight that battle, and hopefully if newspaper publishers pay attention and see that readers really want these sections. I mean, I was talking to an editor recently who said...
Quickly, if you would.
Yeah. That readers want these sections, and they're not going to sit by and have a paper that has less and still charges them the same amount.
John Freeman, thanks very much. John Freeman is president of the National Book Critics Circles. He joined us today from our bureau in New York. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.